Well, good day and welcome to Observations, wherever you may be. I am Craig. We're here with Kirk and with Scott. Larry may join us at some time, but guys, today was the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States. Did either of you catch the Trumpster speech?
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
well, I did.
I'm going to give you my opinion of it, my kind of summation of it, and then like to hear your input. My feeling was that if you didn't know Yahweh and you weren't therefore naturally opposed to all forms of religion, politics, and especially patriotism, but also to militarism, which we all are in the covenant. If you are not opposed to those things, you cannot be in the covenant. So we're universally opposed to those things. Now, that realization, which is our perspective, you know, he is not a covenant member, and he ran for political office. As the holder of a political office, the President of the United States, it was my view that his speech, while I was opposed to most of what he said, because of my covenant perspective, was as good as an elected official could do.
Mm-hmm.
Much better than anything he has ever done in the past, and better than most every president that has preceded him.
Certainly.
It was
the last few, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was a popular message. That was focused on the importance of education, of family, of doing the right things for the right reason. You know, I'm disappointed that he is so fixated on the U.S. military and thinks that that's important, or the U.S. Police and the Justice Department, those sort of things.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's protecting us as those three items.
Yeah, but I like the idea that the sweeping theme of his speech is the government doesn't belong to the elitist, it belongs to you. And for way too long, it has served the interest of the elitist and those who have been elected, and it has not served the people.
I will say I definitely agree with what you said, that it was the best he's done.
Yes.
He has not delivered a speech like that up until that point.
That is correct. It was by far the best he has ever done. And it was a popularist speech. It appealed to the average Joe Blow, Jane Doe American. It was a popular speech.
Let me say, it appeals to the people, the working class and business people who still value work.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses.
Yeah.
If you're on the government dole, you have no interest in what he was saying, because it means we're out there to go back to work.
Right. Now, I don't think the things that really bothered me when he says, you know, and more importantly, God will protect us. Speaking of America,
right.
That is absolutely unequivocally untrue,
right?
And extraordinarily irritating to hear. God does not like America. God, in fact, dislikes America. And he absolutely, unequivocally has not and will not protect America.
No.
Those are not opinions. Those are statements of fact. And so it bothers me for him to say that.
It's a statement that somebody that has no idea who God is. Or
right.
That's just something that you make if you have no idea who God is.
Right. Now, and he said twice, there's two lines he repeated twice. One was, God bless America, twice at the end of his speech. And God is not going to bless America. And the notion of God blessing America is repulsive. It's irritating. It's untrue. It's just completely out of character with who Yahweh is. And second, he said, put America first, twice. Now, you know, if you want to have your life matter, if you want to have your life continue, if you want your life to be well-lived, put Yahweh first.
Mm-hmm. It's the only way.
Yeah.
There is no other option.
So, you know, I would say that, the other things, of course, are the songs, God Bless America, being sung, and then having three or four different ministers get up there and deliver some kind of a sermonette along with their public prayer.
And a rabbi.
I just, oh, gosh, gag me.
Well, you know, they did a benediction, and a benediction is evoking a blessing.
Yeah.
Is a kind of wish for what we want to happen, you know, which is, and you can wish all you want, you can try to vote God all you want, but Yahweh hears different prayers. He hears prayers, if he hears them, number one, he don't want you to pray. He doesn't care that you pray.
Right.
But if you do pray, he would listen to you if you're part of his family, and he ain't going to listen to anybody else, so
right.
That is a moot point. So.
And he absolutely isn't going to listen to you pray in public.
No.
You know, if you're praying in public,
going to closet and pray.
Let's be really clear. If you're praying in public, this is one of the things that really turned me off about Christendom, because I was an ordained ruling elder, and I was often asked to pray in front of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing that bothered me more, because I knew that I was speaking to the people in the audience and not to God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every person that's ever prayed in public has done that. And so that is one of the things that is just extraordinarily irritating, is all those people wrote their speeches to be heard by men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they really were speaking to God, there'd be no reason whatsoever for them to have a microphone or stand up there in front of everybody.
Oh. Well, you can't look holy if you don't do that, though.
You mean he's not hard of hearing?
No. No, he's not likely to hear. And he doesn't really care to hear. So there's would for him to listen to the ritualistic prayers of rabbis and Muslims who don't know him, who mock who he really is, would be nothing but irritating. And I cannot imagine that a being capable of creating the universe is going to spend his time being irritated and mocked.
No, hardly.
No. You know, I'd actually give you guys a question. How many U.S. Army personnel are engaged in combat at the moment?
I'm not even sure.
I don't even know.
That many? Is it more than 25,000?
Too many.
Oh, no. I think the number in Afghanistan from all branches, and not all of them are engaged in combat, but it's less than 10,000 in Afghanistan and less than 5,000 in Iraq. So let's say 15,000.
All right,
15,000. How much does a pistol cost?
A pistol.
$200
a good one.
A really good one, yeah. $200, $300 for a really really good one. So how does the U.S. Army commit to paying $600 million for a replacement pistol?
It's a really, really good one.
You're either overpaying for said pistol by 100-fold, or you're providing 1,000-fold more pistols than are being used.
Good point.
Yeah, it was given. You know, it used to be a Beretta 9mm. Mm-hmm. I have a collection of pistols. Not right. We can call it a collection, but I probably have between pistols and revolvers 10 at my various homes.
I think it's still an M9. I think it's still the Beretta M9.
Well, that is current. The current pistol for the U.S. Army is the Beretta M9. The 9mm. Beretta, and I have one of those. It happens to be the single most reliable and comfortable pistol I've ever fired. More reliable, more comfortable than any revolver. I've never owned a gun that's as reliable, comfortable, or as easy to fire as the Beretta 9mm. But the U.S. Government has decided, nope, we're going to change pistol suppliers, and we are now going with the Sig Sauer.
That's
the SIGSAUER.
Uh-huh.
And they just landed a $580 million contract to purchase the P320 to replace the Beretta 9mm service pistol.
The other one wasn't killing people fast enough?
I guess we weren't
screen that blocked the bullets? I mean, what?
We just weren't spending enough money, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what it is. People are making money.
Now, there was a sermon that was delivered to the outgoing and incoming president this morning by a, I believe he is a Southern Baptist pastor. And he cited the story of Nehemiah, who helped rebuild the city of Jerusalem after it had fallen into disrepair. And it talks about how God chose a, he made a point that God chose a builder rather than a politician or a priest to do it. Now, of course, he didn't know that God never, ever, ever chooses a politician or a priest. Ever. He is opposed to politicians and priests, but the Baptist pastor, of course, didn't know that. And he was saying that God obviously is not opposed to building walls because he encouraged the wall around Jerusalem. Now, he could have cited the story of Jericho and said God's opposed to walls. Look what he did to that one.
That ran on his parade.
But my question here is, if you're a Southern Baptist minister, who do you quote most of the time in your sermons?
Well, I would hope it would be Paul if you're going to be a Southern Baptist.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to quote Paul. Was Paul an advocate of or an opponent of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
He hated the Torah.
So, if you're citing something from the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms as a Baptist preacher, you're being a complete and utter hypocrite.
Pretty much.
You do not know, you do not like, you do not follow, you have no relationship of any kind with the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You ought not be citing them.
Well, the interesting parallel, you've got Yosha, who never said much of anything that of consequence that wasn't a quote from the Torah or an explanation of it. And Paul never quoted Yosha at all, or he twisted anything.
He only quoted him once, and he really, you can't count that a quote, because he took a reference when Yosha was explaining the elements of Passover. You know, he told his disciples, "I want to celebrate Pesach with you," and he talked about the unleavened bread, and he talked about the wine and what the wine and unleavened bread represent at Pesach. And that is for the establishment of the covenant, and to think of him when you eat these things on that date. Well, that was indeed what he cited, except he took it completely out of context to give the impression of a new covenant.
Yes.
And so he misquoted him. So if you misquote somebody, that's not quoting them.
No.
And therefore, he never once quoted him.
Right. So...
Now I have another just interesting observation from the news here. I'm watching the protesters in Washington, D.C., and they're banging out windows. Now, the cameramen, by the way, are photographing them. They're knocking out windows. They're carrying black flags. They're wearing hoodies. They're banging up cars. They're trying to disrupt anybody that wants to go to the inauguration. They are a gang of hoodlums. And you know what bothers me the most about these creeps? Whether it's the protesters under Black Lives Matter, or it's those who are pretending to be politically correct and compassionate and multicultural, because they all say, you know, we won't tolerate division. And who in the hell is dividing? I mean, they were out there today specifically trying to preclude those who wanted to be part of the Trump inauguration from being able to attend.
I saw the only video I saw of it, they were a guy made his way through, but his wife didn't make it through behind him, and he was trying to get back through to get his wife, and they wouldn't let him back through to go get his wife. And they were being very adamant about not moving for him.
No. But the videos that I saw, Reuters video here, I just watched it. And it is gangs of people being just thugs, rioting, breaking windows, breaking into stores, just being hoodlums.
Well, I know that when people break my things, I tend to want to really be part of them. I want to join them, right? Because that doesn't create the divisiveness.
You know, my feeling is that if you want to protest, you can go ahead and protest. That's, you know, in America, you have the right to protest. But if you cannot articulate, using evidence and reason, the justification for your point, you ought not be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to know what they want. What's your end goal to it? Because you can't just protesting just to protest is pointless. It's foolish to me.
You have no goal. Down with something, you got to come up with something. What are you going to replace it with? What's your idea? And then debate it.
Yeah, or explain explain using evidence and reason, facts, why you're opposed to the other position. Mm-hmm. Like today, we're going to use facts, evidence, and reason to not only explain why we're opposed to the Christian position, mm-hmm. but why we are in favor of Yahweh's position.
Right.
And we're just going to do so with words. We're not going to disrupt anyone's lives. If you don't want to listen, you don't need to listen. We're not going to go out there en masse. First of all, we don't have masks, but we don't do that sort of thing. We're not going to walk into your parade. We're not going to walk into your church or your mosque. We're not going to walk into your state house and start yelling and screaming and disrupting your lives based upon this message. If you are
steal and break your stuff.
No, if you want to listen, have at it. If you want to engage in discussion, welcome. But what's taking place amongst those who claim to be enlightened is just disgusting. All right, so speaking of disgusting, we have a fellow, we've nicknamed him Moody Jeff. His first name is Jeff, and he bragged about having spent 4 years at the Moody Bible College, in his words, Moody Bible Institute. Mm-hmm. Learning biblical theology, and we were on page 3 of a response that I had written to him.
Now I have 7, so let me catch up.
All right, he said that he said, to be honest, I was pissed at God for not making it easier to find the truth. I was pissed at God for not making it easier to find the truth. Scott, you've been a part of the Covenant family for about 3 years. Were you ever pissed at God for making it hard to find the truth?
You talking about me?
No. I was not. I wasn't.
Do you ever find the truth difficult to understand?
No.
No?
I remember the first day that we talked. You said that you asked me if I believed in God. And I said yes. And you then said, you asked me if I was religious, and I told you no. Mm-hmm. And then you said, did you know that God has a name? And from that moment on, I've been trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it no. And yeah. You asked me why I wasn't religious. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel right.
No.
I assume that's in everybody.
Yeah, and that's it. If you had said that you were religious, I would have said, I think I'm going to need another program director, because there's no way that the message that we have to convey should be made through a conduit that is religious. So the right answer is no, I'm not religious. I don't care if you know God or not, if you're open to knowing Him. But God's extremely opposed to those who are religious. But since you are not religious, no part of coming to know Yahweh was difficult for you. Kirk, you were at one time quite religious.
Mm-hmm.
And did you find it difficult to reconcile all of the religious notions like Trinity, Christmas, Easter, Holy, New Testament, Old Testament?
Well, I was already at the point where a lot of these things I knew were wrong. In fact, we were taught that actually in our church. We were taught the Sabbath is Saturday. But everything fell to whatever Paul said is why you could overcome it. But that didn't make a lot of sense to us. But we didn't question it enough, obviously. But the minute I knew his name, like like Scott, same thing, and some other things, then everything just started dropping into place. So I just kept reading and studying, and every time I kept studying more, it exposed even more.
Was any part of it difficult to understand?
No, I mean it was time consuming, and you ain't gonna do this in a hurry. But no, difficult? No.
No. Now the thing that's difficult is understanding religion, because it's convoluted and it's self and internally contradictory. In fact, it's irrational.
The other thing that's really frustrating about that religion is that you're relying on somebody else to tell you something.
Yeah,
you don't look for it yourself. You look to other people to tell you an answer.
Right. Yeah. In fact, that's what's interesting.
They have so many sermons.
Yeah. Well, and that, and that's also why it's.
I never could figure it, Paul.
That's also why it's called faith. By calling it a religious faith, they're acknowledging that there is no understanding. If there was understanding, you wouldn't need faith.
Mm-hmm.
If there was knowledge, you wouldn't need belief. So the very fact they call it a belief and faith is why it isn't, why it is impossible to understand. Because if it's a faith, you cannot understand it. So it's impossible to understand. But since it's impossible to understand, it's not difficult to know, because there is no value in knowing.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing to know.
No.
So he's angry at God for making the truth somewhat difficult to find. You know, is the truth hidden someplace in Yahweh's Word? You find it like you have to read through this series of like 20 irrelevant, misleading books, maybe to find a nugget way back in the midst of like Yirmiyah or Chabaouk. Or does it start off right at the beginning with, this is what you need to know?
Well, two-part answer. It's right there in front of you when you start. It just keeps getting better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And from a Christian standpoint, speaking of the man we're addressing right now, if he'd gone to Bible school, so-called, and he had read the Nicodemus story, what did Yahusha tell Nicodemus? What was the upshot of the answer?
How in the world could you not understand, Nicodemus, since you're claimed to be a teacher of the Torah? And, you know, Nicodemus, don't you find the answer? I mean, don't you know that the answer is in the Torah?
And so if you're looking, where do you go? You go to the Torah.
The Torah.
And yeah. He said so. The very guy they misnamed Jesus.
Right. When Yahusha was speaking about the word of Yahweh, what did he said was true and unchanging, and that he had absolutely not come to negate, but instead had come to affirm?
The word of God, the Torah.
The Torah. So, I mean, it shouldn't be hard. You know, in the Torah, in the second chapter of the first book, Bereshith, Genesis, Yahweh tells us his name.
Mm-hmm.
In the first chapter, he introduces himself as the creator of the universe.
Right.
You're not even three chapters in before he's the author of life and the companion of man, engaged in a relationship with man. And the first really comprehensive story, other than the conditions in the relationship in Eden, is about his relationship with Noah and the symbolism associated with the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately thereafter, what's he talking about? Abraham and the covenant.
Right.
So how far do you have to read before you would know the truth?
Not very far. Think you can get this in a sitting?
I would think so.
Questions. Well, how can that be? And then you
right.
go from there. But that's all right. He says, "Go ahead, and put me to the test."
Yeah, and then let me lay this all out for you and explain it through the lives of a people that I've chosen to be my witnesses to the world.
Oracle people, right?
Right. Yeah, these are the chosen people that I have chosen to be my messengers, and let me explain it to you through their story. Beginning with Abraham and Sarah, and then Yishak and Jacob becoming Yisrael, and the life then of the children of Yisrael, all the way to the point that Yahweh and Moshe come to rescue them, and the means that he uses to rescue them, which is presented through the Mikre. So you only have to read, really, through Kara, Leviticus, and you know the whole story. In fact, there's nothing more you really need to know after you've read Barashith, Shemoth, which is names. And Kara, which means invitation to meet. After you've read the first three books of the Torah, everything else is just, this is a different perspective on the same story. This is another perspective that will help you understand what I've shared with you. This is affirmation that I am who I say I am, and that this is the way that life was created and will be continued. There is nothing more. So I don't know how you could say that it is difficult. Now, you are you a linguist?
Not at all.
You're an artist, aren't you?
That's it.
Yeah. Right. Scott, are you a scholar?
Who, me?
No. Scott, do you have a PhD in scholarly thinkology?
No.
Could you even pronounce the religious terms that Moody Jeff used to describe his proclivities?
I'd pronounce him as stupid, but I pronounce these things stupid.
but by the way, I'm not sure. In fact, I'm quite sure I can't pronounce them correctly either. But you know, the fact of the matter is that if you're going to be accused of not being able to pronounce things correctly, which Moody Scott or Moody Jeff did,
yeah,
not Moody
come
Scott.
On, man,
Moody Jeff did. The fact is, you're put in very good company. Because the man through whom he introduced himself to the world and revealed his Torah had a speech impediment. So I'm guilty as charged. So the fact of the matter is, the only way that you could be angry, he said, pissed, at God for making it difficult to find the truth is for you not to know who God is and not know where to look.
Now, years?
Right. Now, in your case, the reason I was going to say scholars and linguists, did either of you know Hebrew?
No, sir.
Did it require you to know Hebrew to come to understand what the covenant was about and who Yahweh is?
No, not really.
No.
You can read this in English translations.
You can. In fact, if you don't know Hebrew, there are an overwhelming number of online tools that are free.
Mm-hmm.
That are called interlinears, where you see the Hebrew word, and you can click on that Hebrew word in the interlinear online for free, and it'll take you to a variety of texts, lexicons. Which have been lexicons and dictionaries that will give you the definition of the word.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even required. All you have to do to check to see what God said is just to have an interest in doing it.
Yes, sir.
Now, you'd have to have an internet connection, but you can get one of those free at a library. You can go to your local Starbucks or Panera Bread and have a bagel and get that done.
Mm-hmm.
So, to be honest, I was pissed at God for not making it easier to find the truth. Now, I'm going to go beyond the fact that he's just wrong. It's wrong in two ways. It is wrong to be pissed at God. If you're pissed at God, it means you do not like the God of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. That is not in your interest. Number two, and if you don't like him, chances are he didn't like you. Number two is that it really isn't hard. It's extremely easy because God's offer couldn't be any more human. What is the core of human society, of human culture, of the human community? If you were to boil it all down to one thing, what is the common denominator of human culture, human community, human society?
Family. Companionship.
Yeah, but family, yeah. Family, which is the center of companionship. Relationships is what drive society and humans. That's why we bring together. We gather together as family. We buy homes as family. We get together as husband and wife, becoming mother and father to raise children as part of a family. There is nothing more central to being human than family. Mm-hmm. And that's the center, the very core of Yahweh's message. He is our Heavenly Father, and through the set-apart Spirit, who is our spiritual mother, is offering, and his invitation is found in the Torah, which is his guidance and teaching, to include us in his family so that we can live with him in the spiritual realm. There really isn't anything more to it than that. So the very concept of who he is and what he's offering, why he created the universe, what he expects for us to be part of his family, he has conditions to live in his home. You know, it's just like an earthly family. If my son wanted to bring in a disease, a really diseased individual, or an individual who was promoting something that was counterproductive, distasteful, inappropriate, we'd say no. You'd protect the family against that sort of thing. You don't want to irritate the family with that sort of thing. So he doesn't want you to come in being religious, militant, or political. You know, it's he wants you to come in recognizing that he is our Father and that he is capable and willing and desirous of being relied upon. And worthy of being relied upon. And he wants us to walk to him along the path that he has provided into his home. Because, you know, his home happens to be in the seventh dimension. There needs to be a path. He has provided a path from our world to the seventh dimension. But he said, you know, that's the only path. I figured one was enough. I want to present it in a straightforward manner. This is the path from where you are in a world of death and decay to my home in the seventh dimension. None of this is hard.
So why is it that Yahweh talks so much about Bereshith or Be'et, the family home, even the letter, the B letter, his tenth
picture of a home,
and he never even came up with a word for religion?
Never once.
So which path do you think he's really most interested in? I mean, is this how you don't have to be real logical to figure this out. It's just the numbers. I mean, that's his interest.
That is his interest. So it's
not religion.
Yeah. Then this guy goes on to say, but I knew there had to be real truth out there. No, there isn't real truth out there. There's real truth in there.
Is there fake truth?
Just no, there is.
Is there a fake truth?
No, real in front of truth is... It's not a scholarly term, but let's forgive that for a moment.
Okay.
But out there is the problem. It isn't out there. It's in there, and that is it's not a small issue. Out there versus in there. Out there is part of the world. That's the Christian notion that, or the Muslim notion that God is everywhere and that nothing happens that God doesn't somehow get involved with, ordain, or make happen. And God is omnipresent and omniscient, all-knowing. That's the kind of God that would have truth out there everywhere. All paths lead to God, kind of mythology, and that you can find God no matter where you're looking. That's the out there mentality. God is opposed to out there. His whole mentality is you have to be set apart from out there if you want to come in here. And the place that you will find his truth is in his Torah. It's in there, not out there. So the fellow's perspective is backwards. He has his back to the only source of truth, which is why he can't find it.
Well, that is the Christian perspective.
It is absolutely the Christian perspective. They begin with their New Testament. That's unfair to say. They do not begin with their Christian New Testament because they do not begin with Matthew. They don't much like Matthew, and they don't pay much attention to Mark.
And we all know why.
Yeah. They pay attention to Luke, who was not an eyewitness. Luke is all hearsay. And Luke was an accomplice of Paul. And they pay attention to Yohanan, but only parts of Yohanan that they can take out of context and mistranslate, recognizing that much of Yohanan has been deliberately changed over the years to accommodate the Christian religion. So they don't begin with their New Testament because the first two books they don't pay any attention to. You're not going to see many sermons that begin with either or have a reference to either Matthew or Mark.
Yeah.
Most of them, of course, are references to Paul. Then he said, I've never stopped believing there was a creator. You know, even believing, what a waste.
Mm-hmm.
What a waste. Do you think that Satan believes there is a God, or Satan, way beyond that, he knows there's a God?
He knows there's a God.
And he knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he knows what his name is, too.
Going from believing is so worthless that that even the adversary is two steps beyond that. Knows that there is a God, and knows who God is. And so we all know, and that, in fact, it all began with his name. We all know that Yahweh is God. We know Yahweh, and we know that Yahweh is God. He proved that overwhelmingly in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms through prophecy. And so we know that for a fact. But knowing that did not get us into his family. Coming to know that caused us to want to know how to be part of his family. So believing there is a creator is something one shouldn't even bother to say, because it's irrelevant. God doesn't care if you believe there's a creator or not. Then he says, I still think, now this is self-serving, I still think that those who have struggled to find Yah, who knows why he uses Yah here, in their own way, should be considered for the next life in his family, because I don't think we've been given enough to get it right.
Okay.
So there are two things here that are deeply troubling. Those who, I think that those who have struggled to find God in their own way should be considered for the next life, should be considered for the next life. So it's not about what you know. It's not about what you do. It's not about what you accept. It's not about anything other than you struggling to find. It doesn't matter if you struggle to find in the Zohar of Kabbalah.
Or you went to India.
Or you went to India to study, you know, the million manifestations of God, and you committed yourself to never eat a cow. Doesn't matter if you went into seances or went into those smoke tents of the Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what you read. Didn't matter if you spent all your time studying Paul's letters. It doesn't matter if you read the Federalist Papers. So long as you searched and struggled to find, it doesn't make any difference if you found. You know what that sounds like to me? And you're a bit of a student of this as a teacher. It sounds like outcome-based math.
Sure.
It sounds like the teaching of the modern age, where the answer doesn't matter, that mutually exclusive answers can both be considered correct, and that that there are no trophies for winning, only for participation.
Participation trophy is what he wants.
So he wants a participation trophy. I participated. I might have played the wrong game by the wrong rules for the wrong reason, but I participated, and I need to have my participation trophy. Boy, there's a guy that was raised in youth soccer. You know, I am not a competitive individual. I really am not. I never went out in a day of work where my goal was to participate. I have never engaged in anything in my life where my intent was to struggle. Anything I've ever done, the intent was to accomplish the goal.
That's a goal base.
Right. To achieve what it is that you were seeking to accomplish. There is no reward for participation. I'm sorry. There is, you know,
I am a competitive person. I am. I've played sports my whole life. I like competition. Anybody that wants just to get the same benefit for doing nothing is a loser. That person is a loser, and I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah, I know that sports are competitive. I mean, by the way, businesses are competitive. You know, when you're in a business, you're competing against other business. When I'm selling, I'm competing against other salesmen and their products. And I realize that there is competition, and I prefer prevailing to having the opponent prevail.
Anything that's worth gaining, you have to work for.
Yeah, but you know, my point is that I would prefer to have engaged in a manner that produces valuable, ethical, proper, and genuine results than I feel pleasure about beating a competitor.
Well, winning on a few points doesn't destroy the opponent.
No.
You know, it's not a die sort of thing.
After competing, I'm not saying that I've never lost. I've lost. In fact, I could tell you more about the things I've lost than the things I've won. Because those sit in my mind longer.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that he wants the same thing that that Kirk gets or Larry gets or...
Right. Realistic is got sports or games.
Yeah,
so the reason we play sports is half of it's for camaraderie, and the other half is to win the game. But it's a game. You know, when we're talking about Yawa and life or our business, we have lots of people employed and lots of lives at stake. Then doing well by doing good is an achieving the goal through hard work and through a sound plan and execution. That's quite different than playing a game. If I play gin with my wife, gin rummy with my wife,
you try to win.
I try to win.
I'm not saying that sports are the be all end all, but that's where I got my competitiveness from.
Right.
No matter what I'm doing, I am competitive, and it comes from when I played sports. I want to be the best at whatever I do. If I work hard and somebody else gets exactly what I get, and they just because they were there, that bothers me.
Yeah, and my view is that working hard is not as important as achieving the result.
Yeah.
I do not care, for example, this is Championship Sunday in the NFL. I don't care which of the four quarterbacks works the hardest.
I guess for me, hard work has to your hard work has to end in results.
Then
I'm not saying that I work harder than anybody, but if I produce better results, but yet
hard work only produces this. This is really gets right to the heart of the issue that was raised. He wants those who have struggled to have be considered, and that gets to the heart of it. Hard work, by in and of itself, can be a good thing or not a good thing, all depending of whether or not the work was done the right way for the right reasons. You know, I can work really hard at exercise and be doing that exercise in a way that's actually harmful to me. Can really work hard at it, but achieve a negative consequence.
Well, you could work really hard at being an axe murderer and be the best axe murderer ever, but it's a pointless thing to do.
I can go out to the golf course and work really hard on my swing, but have a baseball grip.
Yeah.
And just because I'm not doing it the right way. I can practice hitting two irons 100 yards, and I can struggle at it all day long, and it's not going to improve my golf game.
Yeah. Well, he still wants the trophy.
Yeah,
I played in a golf tournament and won in the club championship, and I lost in the playoff, and he got the trophy, and I didn't.
Yeah.
That's the way it works, pal. Nobody cares how good. Boy, I put up a good fight to the playoffs. So what?
You saying we have Larry?
Yeah.
Hi, Larry.
I just wanted to call and say hi. I won't be able to do the show tonight. I just can't. But
oh, okay.
I
Not feeling good?
I did want to. Yeah, well, yeah, not good enough yet. It's going to be March before I do. So, anyway.
Do you have the surgery scheduled?
No, not yet. I don't even want to talk about it. It'll be in March is
okay.
When it'll be. But that's okay. You know, I'll get it handled. So what's going on, you guys? What are we dealing with?
We are talking about Moody Jeff. We've just passed through. To be honest, I was pissed at God for not making it easier to find the truth. And, you know, you are not a rocket scientist, are you?
No, I'm not.
No,
not
you're, not
a,
you're not a rocket scientist. You heard me on a radio program and then started to read some of the things that I had translated and then commented on regarding who Yahweh is and what he's offering. Was there any part of that that you said, boy, God, this is really hard. I don't get it. Why have you made the truth so difficult to understand?
Not once. It finally made sense.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Once you realize Yahweh is an omnipresent, and you realize he doesn't say he knows everybody, therefore
right.
he doesn't know everything.
Right.
Although, as you pointed out aptly, that you know, he's got the ability to know anything he, pretty much he wants to know.
Yeah.
He doesn't choose to know everything.
Right.
He's not a busybody. He's not
right.
micromanaging our lives.
Right.
And it's up to us to actually, you know, I looked for Yahweh, you know, for 10 years before I found him. 10
yeah.
years.
Yeah, but the most amazing thing is to find him, you have to first get out of religion. Because God is so anti-religious, and God as a father does not want to be worshipped. So the moment you're, for the entire time that your perspective is through religion, he can't be found. He's only can be found once you get off your knees and get on your feet and open your eyes and lift your head.
And think.
Then he can be found, and he's easy to find. And then the next thing was that this fellow wanted a participation trophy. He wanted to say, but I think that those who have struggled to find Yah in their own way, not in his way, should be considered for the next life.
This is sort of a Common Core approach. You know,
sure.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, outcome. It's like youth soccer. It doesn't matter
sure.
if you kick a goal. It doesn't matter if you learn the rules. It doesn't matter if you're playing the same game. Just everybody gets a trophy for participation. But he said here, and this is what's so telling, in their own way. Now, why would God want to allow anyone to heaven who has come to heaven their own way?
Well, then Muhammad would be a candidate.
He said they've gone their own way when he's talking about the people that are lost.
Exactly.
Their own way.
Right.
Right.
So what he is saying is that he is among the lost. According to Yahweh, those who have gone their own way are among the lost. They have gone away from him by going their own way because Yahweh only has one way. You know, that makes sense because we're in a 3.5-dimensional world and we're trying to get to a vastly empowered 7-dimensional world. And so the way to do that is very complicated. It takes an enormous amount of support. And so, yeah, I was saying, I created the way to do that. You know, don't expect me to create don't expect me to authorize and somehow bless your way. Because my guess is you don't know how to get from where you are to where I am. In fact, I am certain that you haven't got a clue how to get from where you are to where I am. As a matter of fact, your way will never get from where you are to where I am. So if somebody would, that example I just gave, that's a stupid example. I should be scolded for that. Someone, you know, somebody coming to heaven their own way, you can't get to heaven your own way.
Larry doesn't know how to get there.
Right.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
I have to be reliant on somebody who can take me there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be reliant on his plan.
Right.
It's done his way.
Right.
And I have to meet him on that plane. If
right.
I want to meet him on some plane that I developed and I designed,
right.
it's not, you don't want to try to meet Yahweh in that position. Then you get to be judged. And then
right.
it's just,
right.
I don't want to be judged because if I'm judged, I'll be unworthy. That's
yes.
as simple as that.
Yeah, and then this guy goes on to say, because I don't think we've been given enough to get it right.
Well, we have. Otherwise, some guy from Iowa who doesn't speak Hebrew never could have figured it out.
Yeah. When I ask you a question,
these people that actually translate the oldest, the extant material.
Yeah.
That's out there. It's on websites that are absolutely free. They're called Yada Yah, and they're called ITG, Intro to God, and they're called Observations now,
right?
Like this program. And you can read those, you can listen to the radio, and what you can find out is what Yahweh says.
Right. And by the way, did Yahweh say, he made a declaration about Dod David, and he said, Dod David was Tzedak. What does that mean, that Dod David was? What does Tzedak mean?
It means he was upright. He wasn't groveling.
And
vindicated.
Yeah, and?
Vindicated.
And what's the...
righteous.
Right? Okay,
right.
All those...
Yeah.
All of, there it is. The primary meaning of Tzedak is right.
Being right.
Being right.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, the connotations are also upright and righteous are connotations of Tzedak. But the primary meaning of Tzedak is, he said, Dod is Tzedak, Dod, David, is right. So if Dod, David, is right, and by the way, Dod...
So there's one way to get there, to respond appropriately.
Right, and what...
Yeah, sure.
When Dod was declaring what he understood about Yahweh, what resources did he have available to him to get it right?
Only the Torah.
The Torah. Right, right.
He didn't even have the Nabi or his own more that he was writing, of course.
No.
Yeah.
Nor any of the prophets.
You know, if you really step back and you take a look at the Torah, this is something that, you know, this is stunning when you think about it.
Uh-huh.
Yahweh tells us all within the Torah how to do this, and his primary, the primary way is to listen to him. I mean, that's it.
Right.
Big secret.
So let's just, I mean, that's it. Listen to and observe what he has provided for us in writing through the Torah, prophets,
seriously.
But if all that Dod David had was the Torah, and Yahweh says that his Mizmor, his writings and lyrics regarding the Torah were right, is it possible then that God did not provide enough for us to get it right?
Not a chance.
No. As a matter of fact, didn't Yahweh say, in fact, this is Dod's conclusion, so since Yahweh said that Dod was right, this conclusion is right. Dod said, Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect, lacking nothing, returning, restoring, and transforming the soul. Yahweh's everlasting testimony is trustworthy and reliable, true, making understanding simple for the open-minded. Is that not the antithesis of the last paragraph of Moody, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely.
It sure is. It's in complete opposition. So rather than Yahweh being in opposition, that means that Jeff and his college are in opposition.
Correct. It's one of two people have to be true. Either Moody Jeff's declarative statement that the truth is too hard to find, and that God has not given us enough information to get it right, therefore God has to give consideration for anybody who struggled their own way, or Yahweh is right, and that the Torah is complete, perfect, lacking nothing, capable of restoring and transforming the soul, and Yahweh's enduring and everlasting testimony is reliable, absolutely true, and verifiable, making understanding simple for the open-minded.
Speaking of Dod, that was Dod wrote that in his song,
right?
19:7. So,
that is correct.
Right there.
That is correct. And then Yahweh at the end of his life said, he's right. To take the position that he has taken as a religious scholar, he is in absolute and complete opposition to God's point of view.
I have yet to meet a religious scholar that understood Yahweh.
No. This is Yahweh's declarative statement, and it's the opposite of Jeff's. One of the two is can be right. They both can't be right. Who do you think has a higher likelihood of being right?
That would be the architect of life. That would be Yahweh is right. yeah. and no one else. You yeah. know, Yahweh makes it real clear that, one, he doesn't know everybody, and there's a reason for that. He said, because you forgot my Torah, my teaching, you know, my direction, my guidance, I will forget your children. And that alone means he doesn't know everybody.
Yes.
That in and of itself means it. Now, listen, I've got to go because I'm still at work, but I wanted to call and say hello to you guys.
Hey.
Well, it's good to hear from you, Larry. Man, we're, you know, we're hoping you know, get better.
You sound like you're from Canada, Kirk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey.
I'm a boot.
All right, Larry, thank you.
I'll throw you out of California. No,
they would. They would.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciated the moment there. Thanks.
So, you know, he goes on to say things like, for example, that he's off to Israel and that he thinks that that the evidence on Paul is probably accurate, that Paul is bogus, but he was thought that much of the evidence that I brought against Paul that he couldn't accept.
2,000 pages.
Yes, 1,000. Yeah, I think questioning Paul is 1,200 pages.
Okay,
you know, I was just thinking today that okay, let's just say that you read yada yada and observations and an introduction to God and questioning Paul and even Prophet of Doom, which shows Satan's role in the creation of Islam.
Yes,
you read those. And you were of the position that either Islam or Christianity or Judaism were true. Would you be able to dismiss the evidence and reason presented in those books by refuting the 10 weakest points amongst the 10,000 points raised?
No, because I've tried it.
No, as a matter of fact, if you were to
a debater to see, and there's no way whatsoever.
Right. But let's just say that you were to refute the 10 weakest points.
Okay.
Well, you're still dealing with 10,000 irrefutable points. Mm-hmm. Let's say though that you were to say, "All right, I'm going to make it my my goal to refute the 100 most influential points raised in the in those books." Well, what would that get you? Even if you could, and you can't.
Mm-hmm.
What about the other 10,000?
Well, you still the overwhelming evidence is
right. Right,
supporting that.
You know, there are 5,000 overwhelming, undeniable arguments presented from Yahweh's testimony in opposition to religion. So you can't justify religion unless you can refute every single one of them.
Okay.
And there are 5,000 arguments from Yahweh's word indicating who he is and what he's offering. And you can't take the religious point of view, which is the antithesis of that, without refuting 100% of them.
Correct.
You'd have 10,000 pages of material derived from Yahweh's testimony, and you'd have to refute every aspect of it
mm-hmm.
to justify religion.
So here's what they
good luck
what they
with
will
that.
Say at that point. Mm-hmm. They'll say, you mistranslated it. Now, I would suggest to you that you just quoted Psalm 19.
Yes.
And that I could take a Strong's
right.
and a couple others,
uh-huh.
online stuff, free of charge,
uh-huh. mm-hmm.
and I could look up every one of those words, which it'll tell you what the number is, so you can go to any uh-huh. lexicons you want. And if you choose at least three,
mm-hmm.
you won't find a single mistranslation.
No. Or inadequate translation.
Now, when you look up Torah, I mean, when you look up Yahweh, it will say Lord or God. But you look over to any of the interlinearies, it'll also say Yahweh, Yahai, Wahai.
Yes.
There's no way around it. If you looked up
right.
Torah.
Right. And by the way, and if you. And
I mean, you'd say law.
Right. right. And
it also say learning, teaching, guidance, mm-hmm. direction.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, after all, a shepherd. So you ought to pick, you know, connect that dot. I mean, you just yep. can't do it.
Every single word. Yahweh. Torah, Tamim, perfect, complete, Shub, transforming, Nefesh, soul, all of them.